So I thought what I would do in my 15 minutes is describe what I see as the history a little bit and status of two projects that I've been engaged in, an intellectual project and an institutional project in the international domain. Costas asked me to speak about how the critical project has had something to do not with criminal law but with international things and how it's moved to have a global dimension as I would see it at the moment, and so that's what I intend to do. I'm not sure that either of these projects, either the institutional project or the sociological intellectual project, have any relationship to critical legal theory or the history of the kinds of things that you guys have been working on here at Birkbeck. So maybe this is a little bit out of place. But anyway, so it would seem to me that the intellectual project began of thinking about the way people consider global law and the relationship of law to the way we're governed and ruled at the global level started with a bunch of people about the same time who were stewing around in all kinds of theoretical traditions, interested in and affected by the history of American legal thought, and in particular legal realism as it had been rejuvenated by critical legal studies and brought back to the foreground of thought in the academy by socio-legal studies, for sure, and the whole tradition beginning in the 50s and 60s of trying to assess the sociological impact of and impact on what seemed to be an otherwise disembodied doctrinal and legal theoretical corpus. And then also, I guess we could say postmodern theoretical influences of the type that you were talking about, and feminism also. So I would say as a somewhat separate, distinct, and very significant intellectual force. But I don't think any of the people that I'm going to mention or who were involved in this project of thinking about global rulership saw themselves particularly as contributing to those traditions and their development or even really much interested in what happened to them. Those were just parts of the background in relationship to which we were trying to figure out something about law and something about the world. And so I would say the intellectual project began by people very situated in specific legal fields, in public international law, in international economic law, in comparative law. I'm in the law relating to the field of law and development, if we think about David Trubeck. And the idea was to try to figure out what was helpful and unhelpful about those traditions as they'd been developed for figuring out answers to the questions that those traditions posed for themselves. So if public international law was supposed to be describing and also normatively proposing how law would structure the actors and the powers at the global level, well, did it do a good job? Was its history right? Was something missing? What could we say about it? And could we do better? I think we were interested in and loyal to and committed to the projects of those doctrinal disciplines more than we were to the heritage of the critical endeavor itself. On the other hand, it turned out that we didn't actually think those fields had it very well sorted out, and that actually they could be improved or destroyed by a healthy dose of the stuff we were getting out of reading all this critical literature. And so I think the first project was one of delving into each one of those fields and trying to figure out what are their stories about how things fit together. Where are they coherent or incoherent? Do they add up? Do they have blind spots? Do they seem to be providing paths to reform, but actually do they function in one or another way as apologies for the way things are organized? I mean, classic kinds of critical questions, but questions that would be asked by anybody interested in those fields. And I would say in the American Legal Academy of the 1980s and 90s, these were all very weak fields. So they were low status fields that did not have powerful intellectual players in them. And so just bringing them up to date with law and economics and with legal realism and so forth was already a big piece of work. So public international law, I mean, when I was a student, was just the most marginal place for people who, you know, legal sensibility was not particularly sophisticated. And in that sense, it didn't take a lot of Derrida to figure out something interesting to say about it. I mean, you just brought the most simple idea about maybe it's actually not how you say, and that, or, you know, maybe those two things don't go together, and maybe there's some kind of contradiction, or principles travel in pairs, or whatever, some slogan from Llewellyn, and the whole thing falls apart. So in that sense, the first project was one of trying to inhabit those fields. So going global was just going into the global fields and trying to update them with some sense of their, some sense of demonstrating first that at the doctrinal level, they were more contradictory and incoherent than the people in them thought they were, and that the legal component of international social life was paradoxically stronger than the people in those fields thought that it was. So on the one hand, not as coherent as people said, but on the other hand, a lot stronger than people said. It's sort of an odd thing. But this wasn't that the international law was strong or was incoherent. It's just that it was less coherent than the people in it thought it was, and it was stronger than the people in it seemed to say it was, even though they kept saying it's really strong. But the more they protested that it was really strong, the more I thought, oh, come on, you wouldn't be protesting that so much if you didn't actually have accepted, you know, long ago some Austin notion that it's not really law and you can't explain to your grandmother why you're studying it. So you actually have to have, you know, let's stop doing that, explaining how international law is binding, and stop imagining that it's just a blanket of rules resting on top of a roiling sea of politics, and figure out whether or not there's a deeper relationship between those things that can be figured out. So it's a very practical problem, not a theoretical problem, but a sociologically descriptive problem, and then normative to the extent people in international law think that their description is also a program. So they both want to say, this is how the world is organized, and also, and if it's not, it would be really great if it was organized like this. So make it your project to complete the promise and the project of the discipline. If you could say the promise of the discipline was not worth completing or wasn't really right or mistook everything about how things really operated, you'd have to open the way to some new kind of practical proposal. So that, and it turned out that telling that story was really different in public international law than in international economic law. Their own methodological points of sophistication and blindness were quite different. Their historical preoccupations were different. Their styles of analysis and approaches to interdisciplinarity were different. If political scientists were the main interlocutors and bête noirs of public international law, economists much more for international economic law. So you needed to do it in a whole different way. Well, you couldn't apply the theory in one field after another. You had to work out the incoherences and the coherences and the gaps and elisions in each one of these fields as if for the very first time in relationship to how they were actually working, which meant that the people doing it, whatever we were doing, in comparative law, international economic law, public international law, law and development, were not doing the same thing, although sometimes we could get a tip from one another about where we'd gone wrong. But I think there were some general propositions that emerged out of that, that these fields somehow were not taking an appropriately hard-eyed look at the way things really were organized in the world. There were a lot of things they weren't seeing, a lot of injustice that they weren't seeing, and that they were somehow also implicated in the reproduction of the things that they were saying that they were ameliorating. So a classic critical idea, but how do you actually sort that out? So I think there were a lot of it is just common sense, like and basic legal realism. So international environmental law, if you open the casebook, it says it's all about protecting the environment. And actually, it turns out as if law had nothing to do with despoiling the environment. So there's a whole project of figuring out the implication of the legal things in the very problems that some of the aspects of it are trying to resolve. Well, that's not a heavy Derrida project. It's just a working out the ways in which the field is doing dirtier work as well as clean work and is technocratic in ways that it's promising to be humanist and is actually, and so on. And then I think you could generalize out of that, that across all of these fields, they purported to be humanist and progressive, but somehow weren't, but in different ways. You could make a kind of list of, to coin a phrase, the dark sides of virtue. So you could say there are kinds of things that go wrong in the effort to bring about development, in the effort to bring about human rights, in the effort to bring about beating swords into plowshares that are common across all these things. And maybe we could begin to generalize from the things that had come up in one field for something more general about the rule of law. But it wouldn't be theoretical. It was kind of observed sociological or ideological critique of these things. And I would say the next phase was trying to get an integrated conception. So what in general is going on, of which these fields in their specific deficiencies and difficulties were examples? And there have been a bunch of efforts to try to figure that out. One of which would be the effort to try to think about political economy across all of them. So what are the contributions of international economic law, public international law, international tax law, or whatever, to the stabilization and reproduction of a general global political economic structure that in which politics and economics are separated from each other, happening on different terrains and so on. That would be one generalization. Another would be, how do we understand the role and development of ideas and the significance of national traditions or regional traditions in global law? So, and here I'm, what's comparative law or area studies got to do with the general legal fields? And is the international legal order the projection of the hegemonic American legal order, or is it something else, some weirdo combination of national traditions bopping into one another and in conflict with one another? With a practical question, if you want to practice international law or practice in a global environment, should you go get an LLM in the United States and become an American lawyer, or should you do something that allows you to see how national traditions collide with one another? It's something that may not be that visible if you only study in one internationalized culture. And here I'm thinking of Duncan Kennedy's stuff on three globalizations, rethinking the tradition of influences and transplants, and the role of background ideology or consciousness across all these fields in our understanding of what was transplanted. So maybe what was transplanted wasn't the institutions or the forms or the arguments or the specificity, but something deeper and larger, and it might be an amalgamation of a whole lot of different things. And how do we think about that, and what's its history? So that's another set of generalizing intellectual projects that emerge from these specific field studies. And then I guess a third one would be, all of these fields are inhabited by people who have projects and are moved to produce their projects in a way that deploys certain professional practices and institutions and happens against the background of ideas. Can we say something in general about the role of experts and professionals or expertise as a knowledge practice, a kind of Foucauldian project? What are the power knowledge projects of through which the global legal order and political order are stabilized and reproduced? And can we say something about the people, their ideas, and their forms of relationship with one another? Is network the right way to think about it or not? And so on. So, and then I guess the last thing I would say at the intellectual level is an effort to try to have something to say to people who are asking questions that the traditional disciplines ask, like, is the global system a system and is it constituted? Or is it not a system? And it's not, is it fragmented or is it a total? I think there have been a bunch of people trying to answer those sorts of general questions. I'm not sure with much luck or any, you know, clear outcome to it, but in one or another way, trying to harness the outcomes of these discipline-specific projects and these integrative projects around expertise, consciousness, political economy, to say, to re-engage with what have become the common traditions of the fields themselves. Okay, so we could say more about those specific intellectual projects and what they are and what they're not. The main point I wanted to just emphasize is that the starting point for me in thinking about the influence of critical projects on global law and practice is very field-specific and rooted in the projects and promises and difficulties of specific fields, rather than in a tradition or heritage of theory, which seems to me just to be like kind of a toolbox of things you might be interested in seeing whether it's helpful. But now I want to say something about the other side of the coin, which is to what extent has this set of intellectual inquiries itself gone global? So is there a globalization of the critical intellectual endeavor as an institutional form? Or how did American and UK critical legal societies get to have all these foreigners in it? I mean, what happens that there would be so many internationally oriented people, because anyone who's not American is an internationally oriented person, to be sort of interested in it? Well, so here I guess that what was the appeal, to whom was this set of projects appealing? And what were the institutional conditions of its reproduction? Well, I think, in my experience, it was and continues to be appealing to a certain kind of person who's a young legal person who might think of him or herself as an intellectual, or might for the very first time get the idea that there's such a thing as an intellectual and that you could be one and be one in relationship to law, and that would be fun and there'd be a community and so forth. So some group of people began to appear in legal education who could be appealed to as a transnational class of young legal intellectuals. And they could aspire to actually have jobs, go home and work in a changing academic environment where law schools were becoming more academic. They might aspire to get jobs in the United Kingdom where there was, you know, the declining salaries meant that foreigners could get the jobs, and or in the United States where every law school needed to go global, so having a foreign person meant you were global, like automatically. Or for whatever reason, there were opportunities in which these people could expect to have some continuity in their project, and they would then be drawn in. And usually it would have something to do with something. They were like, it was never some French person from Paris. It was always some French person whose father was really Algerian, but actually they were Slovenian, and they couldn't stand the way they were interested in international stuff, because like they were from Algeria and Slovenia, but then when they'd go and study international law in Paris, it would be the most repressive French awful thing, and they would think, but there has to be something else. And so, or maybe they were women, and you know, the whole global thing seemed like, oh my God, it's the most regressive anti-feminist kind of project where I did it. Or for whatever reason, or they were third world people who came to the first world here in London or in the United States or somewhere with the following question: what happened to my country? So, and they, you know, their parents had never told them, and their law school teachers never told them, and it all seemed terribly fucked up, and yet it was not clear what being a lawyer or a legal thinker would have to do with answering that terribly important question. And if you could say, well, there's actually a whole history of the ideas and the institutional practices that became embedded in policy choices, and here's what happened in your country, they'd think, wow, I have understood something that is empowering to me. So, here I think the institutional conditions of globalization required that there be some people susceptible to the virus of the intellectual practices going on in these fields. Those people had to find one another, and they had to find the ideas, and they had to feel that they had the capacity to then go and continue to do them, and that meant some fields took priority and some questions took priority. So the question of, I think, the third world approaches to international law movement arose out of the particular concerns of those people who wasn't my idea. And I thought, oh my God, there are all these third world people. They're really mad at the third world generation that I didn't really know that much about beforehand, who'd been terrible, and they wanted to say why it was terrible. And so all that kind of input from people in a variety of different places demanded answers, and they pursued forms of inquiry that affected the direction of the intellectual project as it went on. And then they found places where there was a person who was either charismatic or not charismatic, but was there, who had some money, and there was some institutional something, and it could become a node globally. So you could say, where is this project active? Well, it ranges from Los Andes at Bogota to Helsinki to, but it's really weird where it is. The explanations are serendipity and institutional possibility combined with friendship that have produced a space in which people can continue to try to do those things. So it's, now, what's the future of all that? Well, it seems to me, my own sense is that it's a very weak and partial story at the moment, that there are some number of hundreds of young legal intellectuals who have a more or less tenuous relationship to these common projects distributed across a bunch of fields in human rights and in trade law and so on and so forth, who know each other a little bit, have some kinds of institutional positions, but we actually haven't figured out in any decisive way what's wrong with any of these fields and how to improve them, or how to generalize from that. And the fields themselves are moving targets. It's not like they've been standing still since 1980. So every year it's a kind of different project, and they're different people, and it's really fun, and I hope you all want to play.